Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in New Orleans to speak with Jake Madison of Locked On Pelicans about Zion Williamson joining the Pelicans, as well as their other moves and picks on draft day. We'll go to Phoenix to speak with Evan Sidery of Locked On Suns, just to figure out exactly what the Phoenix Suns were doing. And lastly, we go to Memphis to speak with Mark King of Locked On Grizzlies about the Grizzlies draft haul and why it is widely regarded as one of the best in the NBA. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, and I'm the lead analyst at BasketballMonster.com. The NBA draft is in the book, so we're going to go around to three teams in the NBA and talk about some of the biggest stories and some of the biggest picks that were made on Thursday at the NBA draft. So let's get to it. Now I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast. We're going to be talking about the Pelicans draft, one of the, roundly regarded as one of the most successful draft hauls. On Thursday's NBA draft, Jake Madison is here. Jake, could it have gone any better for the Pelicans, do you think?
No, overall, I think you've got to be thrilled if you're New Orleans with how Thursday night developed. You know, just selecting Zion Williamson would have just made it a successful night in and of itself. But they moved out from the fourth pick, where there wasn't really a player they were enamored with, traded down, got 8-17, and not only that, unloaded Solomon Hill's contract to the Atlanta Hawks, picked up future assets as well. So they came away with three total first-round picks, plus another $13 million in cap space, which is going to give them maybe around anywhere between 30 to 33 this offseason. Overall, very good night for New Orleans.
Now, personally, I wasn't the massivest fan of picking Jackson Hayes there at number 8. I think there are other guys I would have taken there. I didn't have him personally ranked as the best center in the draft, and the fit with Zion could be an issue. But obviously, David Griffin has different thoughts on that. What's the overall thought on getting Jackson Hayes at number 8? At this point, the Pelicans center situation is fluid with Jahlil Okafor, Christian Wood, and Cheick Diallo as a restricted free agent. They're the centers who are on this roster. So is there a chance that Hayes can come in and actually be a rotation guy immediately?
Yeah, I think they're going to look to get him some seasoning in the NBA. He's not going to be a starter. This isn't a guy who's going to be playing any more than 20 minutes per game, if that. And you expect to maybe see him in the G League a good bit. I think they kind of see the athlete he is, former wide receiver in high school, and he certainly runs like one. And they kind of just have visions of a very athletic front court. I know some people are questioning the fit, like you mentioned, because of the lack of a jump shot. There's no range from the three-point line, but he's a very good rim-running big. He's the defender down low that can protect the rim, meaning when he's on the court, Zion Williamson can play the four, which probably just makes that transition to the NBA a little bit easier for him. I'm personally kind of salivating at the idea of Zion Williamson as the ball handler and then Jackson Hayes setting pretty hard screens for him and rolling to the rim. And instead of the lobs going to Zion, they're going to go to Hayes. I had him rated as the best center, but I get that if of that night, I think people are looking at that one maybe with the most questions.
Yeah, I think it's the lack of shooting. Look, he could project into becoming at least a decent spot-up shooter. He's a very good free-throw shooter as a big man as well. A poor rebounder, but that free-throw shooting is something that can be worked on, and they couldn't work there. But they also had other first-round picks. He had number 17 they got in that trade with the Hawks. Nickeil Alexander-Walker, a decently long guard. I don't know if he's a point guard or a shooting guard, really. I guess in a similar mold to how Jrue Holiday sort of flips between the two roles. Decent shooter, good defender, and not one that's necessarily going to have a huge impact this season, but I think someone who is absolutely, at minimum, going to be an NBA rotation player.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what they were looking at there. 17 overall, they could have gone a number of different directions. I thought they might have maybe made a grab at Brandon Clark, who was available there too, but I think they looked at him and just picked the best shooter left available, and that's something this team's going to need, particularly with Zion down low. If you get a guy who can just be a good spot-up shooter at 17 his first year or two in the NBA, you're going to be pretty happy with that. He can guard multiple positions. He rebounds decently well, too, and he can handle the ball well enough. I don't think you want him playing point guard, but as a secondary creator, I think that kind of fits. Like you said, similar to Drew Holiday, Lonzo can be your primary point guard. There's Frank Jackson there, too, who's a bit of a secondary creator. So I think the Pelicans are just looking for a lot of guys who can handle the ball in sort of some capacity, and I think they found that there at 17.
It is an interesting draft haul trading back there. I'm with you in terms of that option at number four. There wasn't a real clear-cut player there. Has there been any pushback, though, from, say, Pelicans fans that they didn't go with someone, say, like a Darius Garland or someone who other people may have thought, Jarrett Culver, who was a clear better option at number four? Has there been pushback like, oh, what are they doing? Yeah, grab that option. That was one of our big assets from this Davis trade.
Yeah, you know, I think a little bit. Obviously, I think maybe a DeAndre Hunter or a Jarrett Culver would have been the move there at four for the Pelicans, given that they just haven't had wing depth or a good solid player at the wing in a very long time. I think it also might show the faith they have in Brandon Ingram, who came back over in the Anthony Davis trade, to not go get some greater depth behind him. Maybe they really believe in him and are going to give him every opportunity to shine at that position. So I think that had to do with the thinking as well. You know, this is a team that's still going through a rebuild, and now they're in very good position, not just for the short term, but the long term as well. And I think that's kind of what they were valuing. I'm sure they're pretty happy picking up that 2020 Cavs potential first round pick, top eight protected or lottery protected, I forget which, that then turns into future seconds. Right now, it's just about amassing assets and kind of building that war chest to make a move in 3 or 4 years when Zion Williams is maybe ready to be the leader of the team, when you're in more of a contender status or a position. I think that's kind of what they're looking to do. So maybe while you would have liked a Jarrett Culver, DeAndre Hunter, and I think those guys would have been very good players here in New Orleans, it just made more sense to trade down. And I think this is kind of what we saw in this draft, though. Anywhere from 4 to 12, depending on how much you liked them or rated them, they were all kind of just very similar type of players grade-wise. So I think they were just looking to get the most value. And you can see this Pelicans front office is operating from a very different standpoint, maybe more of an analytical and value-oriented standpoint than we've ever seen before.
Yeah, that's the way it appears as well. They also had a pick very early in the second round as well, Marcos Luzada Silva, also known as Didi, a 6'6 wing out of Brazil. Do we know if Didi is going to be coming across this season?
I think so we don't know for sure, and I think the general assumption is no, with three rookies already from the first round and another of young guys also coming over in that Anthony Davis trade. I think they didn't want to go like full-blown youth movement here. So in the second round, they picked a guy who's likely not going to play next season, though he kind of has shades of maybe just as good as Josh Hart, which isn't bad at the 35th overall pick. And then they traded and sold kind of some of their other pick they had in the second round, meaning they just didn't want these guys necessarily to make the roster next year, as roster spots are going to be kind of a bit of a crunch on that after summer league. So we'll see where they go. But I think it's nice to kind of have in your back pocket, let him play overseas a little bit longer, and then maybe bring him over when the timing's a little bit better.
Before I let you go, Jake, what is the Pelicans' next move? What's their next priority order of business?
So I think what you're going to see is now with a bunch of cap space and more cap space than I think I can recall seeing in the past, you know, something like 10 years for New Orleans, and more first round picks on this roster than they've had in the past decade after Dell Demps traded them all away. I think you've just got to be smart. Don't go out and necessarily overpay veterans in free agency. I think they're looking for what David Griffin termed culture bearing veterans, maybe a guy like a Nikola Mirotic if they want to bring him back, or a guy like Jared Dudley, kind of those mid to lower tier free agents. Maintain your cap space and then go into the season maybe with $20 million left over, and you can take on a bad contract in a trade. Maybe a guy like Gallinari is one of them, maybe Steven Adams from Oklahoma City. If those teams want to dump some salary and are willing to include future first round picks with it, the Pelicans are going to be in prime position to be able to take those contracts on. And I think that's going to be the way they kind of build for the future and what they're looking to do.
It's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out. Everyone's going to have their eyes on Zion, especially on the opening day of Vegas Summer League, where the Pelicans are going to be taking on the Knicks. I'm looking forward to being there to see Zion's debut in a Pelicans uniform. Jake, you're going to have all the coverage of the Pelicans, their draft recap and free agency coming up over on Locked On Pelicans. So thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, Josh.
For the latest takes on NBA free agency, follow all of the Locked On Podcast Network hosts on our one Twitter feed at Locked On NBA Net. An awesome way to get all the latest opinions from the local experts during NBA free agency at Locked On NBA Net. We go to Phoenix now to speak with one of the hosts of the Locked On Suns podcast. Evan Sidery is here to talk about Phoenix. And Evan, the general consensus around Phoenix is that they, maybe not that they were the worst, although that's a pretty popular opinion, but probably the most confusing day on draft day for this Phoenix Suns team, trading away TJ Warren for literally nothing, trading back from 6 to 11 to get Dario Saric and that 11 pick. And then making a move with Boston to acquire Aaron Baines. So let's just start with the broad strokes. What do you think Phoenix was overall trying to achieve here?
I think originally when I first traded TJ Warren for caps for just cash from Indiana, I really just thought they were just going to trade him for cap space like he did. They're going to really just try to save up some money here, go after a guy, D'Angelo Russell or a Malcolm Brogdon. But like we mentioned later on in the night, they acquired Aaron Baines as well, so they cut up half that salary and Dario Saric too. So I don't know really what they're doing as far as if they're just trying to rework the team on the fly here or if they're trying to save money, split money. Who knows, Josh? Because it seems like it's on my end, like we've said on the podcast multiple times in the last few days, it's just a really confusing night for the Suns for sure.
They opened up a little bit of cap space, but it's nowhere near as much as what it would have been if it just had have been that TJ Warren deal with we're getting Saric and Baines back. Baines, a guy, and initially the thoughts were, are they going to buy him out? Is he going to remain? No, he's going to be there. That probably lessens the chance of Rishaun Holmes coming back. I'd say that some of the moves that Phoenix made also may lessen the chance that Kelly Oubre is back.
Yeah, I would say there's a chance of that. But from what I've heard personally, I think he's going to be a guy who probably signs on the dotted line here first week of free agency because he's a guy that this Suns have been prioritizing. James Jones has always been talking about Kelly Oubre as a franchise piece, so to say he wants him here long term. But I think there is a limit, though. If he gets $17, $18 million per year, it's possible. But like if they get into the Cam Johnson pick here with Mikal Bridges, those two guys are vastly different than Kelly Oubre. So it definitely is an interesting idea. But I think from all indications, Kelly Oubre is going to be staying in Phoenix.
The Cam Johnson pick is obviously the biggest. Well, it was the biggest shocker of the first round. There are other picks that were almost as questionable to me in that early part of that first one, that mid part of the first round. But Johnson, the oldest player to be drafted, a really, really strong shooter out of North Carolina. The reports were some teams had him medically red flagged due to hip and back issues, but the Suns went at 11. He was routinely mocked to be picked in the mid 20s, maybe even in the second round. For any Suns fans listening, Evan, can you what's the defense of this pick? Because it literally came out of nowhere. To me, initially, it felt like that the Suns had wanted to pick Cam Reddish and then hadn't remembered that he'd gone the pick before, so they just went with the next Cam on the board. Like, that's how my level of delusion with what was actually going on at that point.
All right, the hypothesis that I've come up with, I think just best sums up it, because I think I'm with you, Josh, in this one. But from the positive spin of this, I think they're just trying to do the inverse of what Ryan McDonough did, which is not do Dragan Bender, not do the Marquise Chris and Josh Jackson of the world. Don't bank on potential. Just get immediate guys in here like Ty Jerome and Cam Johnson, 21, 23 years old, that are just going to be immediate contributors right off the bat there. And I mean, that's what James Jones is going for, just immediate guys. Who knows how high their ceiling is, but he wants guys that aren't going to bust, so to say. And I think the Suns, they've had in a 2016, 2017 draft class, if Josh Jackson's indeed let go in the next couple weeks, they'll have no guys remaining from those two draft classes. So I think just James Jones is looking for exactly the opposite of what Ryan McDonough did there.
Speaking of the opposite of what Ryan McDonough did, there was a bunch of point guards brought in over, and some of that was James Jones as well, with drafting Ali Okobo last year at pick 31, and the Suns were raving about him, top 20 guy, he's a first-round talent, all that sort of stuff. Then the trade to acquire D'Anthony Melton, and I thought he worked pretty well off Devin Booker, especially before he got injured at the end of the season, bringing in Tyler Johnson in a trade, and then they go out and make a trade here to trade up to get Ty Jerome out of Virginia. They signed Jalen Lecque on a 2-year guaranteed undrafted free agent rule. So basically bringing in every point guard that they almost can. And still, the overwhelming message, I guess, coming out of the Suns is they're still looking for a veteran point guard in free agency. Again, is this just like we just don't want any of this stuff, even if some of it I thought worked and they don't give it long enough of a time to develop, like getting rid of or eliminating Melton and eliminating Okobo. And yeah, Tyler Johnson's going to be here one more year, but they just going to marginalize him. Is that just what it is? Just, hey, we just want new guys in here.
Yeah, I think it's James Jones wants to rebuild the entire team of his image here. And I think the only guys who are safe there are DeAndre and Devin Booker and Mikal Bridges. I think he wants to build a team the best to their strengths. But it's interesting just how quickly he's trying to flip this roster over, Josh, because I originally thought they'd keep some of these young guys here, but going out and getting Jalen Nicue as an undrafted free agent on a 4-year deal, 2 years guaranteed, then taking Ty Jerome, trading the Bucks that they got for the Eric Bledsoe trade to get Jerome, it tells you all you need to know there about Elia Coben and DeAnthony Melton. I just wonder why they do that and what their trade value could be, though, because it's hard to say what it could be around the league.
Has Josh Jackson played his last game for the Phoenix Suns?
I have to think so, Josh. I mean, he's been the legal issues in the past couple weeks here. You probably read it online. The listeners probably read it online as well. He got arrested at Rolling Loud. He had another incident in the past week or so. It's just been a bad offseason for Josh Jackson. It's kind of not what Monty Williams wants there, it sounds like. I think they just want to have high-character guys that are in that locker room around their star players. And if I had to guess, I think there's no way he plays again for the Suns, whether it's being traded or maybe flat-out waived. I just don't see how he plays another game there.
Dario Saric came across in that trade that netted Cam Johnson with pick number 11. Saric has 1 year left on his rookie deal, will be a restricted free agent, his extension eligible this season. He is almost definitely going to slot into that starting power forward position with the Suns next to DeAndre Ayton. And then, but you still have this issue on the wing, Booker at the two. They obviously don't want to play him as a point guard. There's Bridges, there's Johnson, there's Oubre to play the 3 and the 4 minutes. There's still that little bit of a crunch. So how do we see Saric? Because I think he was significantly underwhelming in Minnesota. But it has to be a big upgrade on what the Phoenix Suns had at power forward last season.
Oh, absolutely. I think Saric is actually the biggest winner from my point of view from what the Suns did on draft night. Just you get a guy who is going to be a good rebounder, even though he's might not be the best. He's a good shooter. The last time he was alongside Monty Williams in Philadelphia, he was in there 40% three-point shooter. So I think he's a guy who could be a really good fit next to DeAndre Ayton. The defense is definitely suspect there, but for 1 year, or if he does do well here in Phoenix, maybe it's a long-term deal eventually. I like the gamble here by James Jones because I think Saric is a guy who just needs the right opportunity. He's a savvy passer. The defense is suspect, though, but I think the offensive fit is actually pretty good here.
Well, the Suns team, again, we're not going to know the full idea behind all of this until free agency. There's every Suns fan in the world apparently wants D'Angelo Russell to be there, but Evan, you'll be well aware that John Gambardaro has, I think he's put it into his Twitter bio now that D'Angelo Russell will not be coming to the Phoenix Suns. So that's putting a bit of a pin in that bubble.
Yeah, it seems like John Gambardaro is putting his career on the line there with the D'Angelo Russell thing. And it's interesting just because if they stretch or trade Tyler Johnson, you're almost at D'Angelo Russell room. But I don't know if he's the right sort of fit for this team. Just I don't know if you put that much money in the backcourt. Maybe they go for a Malcolm Brogdon type or Patrick Beverley type instead. I think those two actually make more sense with what James Jones has done in the last week or so.
Well, the D'Angelo Russell, Devin Booker backcourt would make McCall Bridges' defensive acumen be really put to the test. We'll leave it at that. Evan, you'll have all the information about the Suns, what they do in free agency over on Locked On Suns, as well as more draft talk. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Yeah, no problem, Josh. Appreciate it.
When you are driving to work, from work, or just around town, all you have to do is tell your smart device to play the podcast Locked On NBA, and we'll be right there with you for the drive. Now I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Mark King is here to talk about Memphis's Thursday night at the NBA draft. Of course, we all know they had pick number 2, and it was widely speculated that they would be taking Ja Morant. That's, of course, the way it panned out. Most reporters and draft grades can be a little bit silly at this point, Mark, but most people think Memphis had a pretty successful night.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you mentioned, Ja Morant was the guy that I've been talking about for a while. Everybody in the city has been talking about for a while. I think everybody nationally has been talking about for a while as the number 2 pick. There was some, you know, internal debate, I guess, between Ja Morant and Najee Barrett, but after we talked to general manager Zach Kleiman, at the end of the night, it was pretty much they never entertained any offers for that number 2 pick for trade-wise. They knew exactly what they wanted in Ja Morant, and then they actually ended up going and getting Brandon Clark as well, 21, which they got at a pick from Utah. So the Thunder actually selected for Utah, who selected for the Grizzlies, which is that weird thing where we just can't the players can't talk about, you know, who you're actually playing for, can't wear the hats that they're playing for, so that's kind of weird. But they went and got Brandon Clark as well, and they also signed another two-way guy. So I think by all counts, they had a really, really good draft.
I think that's exactly right. Look, Brandon Clarke was mentioned in many different draft areas as being maybe a top five prospect, top 10 prospect. To see him fall all the way to the or outside the top 20, and then the Grizzlies pounce by using that Jazz pick that they did get from the Mike Conley trade to get him is huge. We know that Brandon Clarke, we'll talk about Moran a little bit in a second. We know Clarke is a little bit undersized, 6'8", with just a 6'8 wingspan, but had one of the most successful college seasons of all time. Blocks a ton of shots, has some shooting upside, can pass a little bit, but just knows where to be. Unbelievably athletic, and that pairing with him and Jaren Jackson, it looks to be the front court of the future.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Grizzlies have some decisions to make on Jonas Valanciunas. As the market has depressed a lot for centers, and they'll still be able to work out a deal with him in the summer. But, you know, you would like to think that Brandon Clarke and Jaren Jackson Jr. are the future for this franchise in the front court. So, I think that obviously he's the 21st pick in the draft. So, you know, there is a little bit of realistic expectation there that a lot of guys are in that spot. You know, it really takes a lot for them to really become something. And so really what you want in that range of, you know, 20 to 30 kind of, you know, even like 18 to 30, you just want a role player. If you can develop a role player out of that position in the draft, then you've done well. That's exactly what you should be looking for. And I think that Brandon Clarke is someone who defends the ball or defends really well, can switch on most things. But obviously, does not have a good outside shot at all. Anything outside, you know, anything outside like 15 feet is really not good for him. But you know, can finish on the rim, pretty much catch anything in the air. And Durant's got a great pass ability. Scoring lobs and him will be fantastic and fun to watch. But he's going to have some time to develop. But if he develops into a role player like you would expect, and it's someone that you can make a career. Have someone who can defend if you're big, that can defend multiple positions and not just get killed and pick and roll in this NBA. That's something that you could, you know, really, really make a solid NBA career out of, especially with someone like Jaren Jackson Jr., who, to be frank, he's going to take most of the offensive possession. So, you know, you're not asked to do a whole lot of scoring other than just finish putbacks, finish around the rim, those type of things. So it's a good pairing for someone like Jaren, and they did good at going up and grabbing Brandon Clarke.
You talk about, you know, we shouldn't have these high expectations for guys picked at 21 and they're going to be role players, but you only have to go back and look a couple of years ago with a guy that was picked at number 19 in the draft, and that's John Collins of the Atlanta Hawks, who almost immediately became a part of that core there for the Hawks as starting at power forward, another guy who I thought slipped significantly, much like Brandon Clarke. So there is, you know, obviously, and you could go back into many, many drafts. Collins is just the guy that came to my mind initially of guys that can just come in and go, well, he was picked in the 20s, but so what? Like, this guy is a starting caliber player. I think that's what Clarke's going to be. Do you think this does reduce the likelihood that Valanciunas is back?
I don't think it really has a whole lot of effect on Valanciunas. I think that there are a lot of other factors that are going to affect Valanciunas more than Brandon Clarke. I think that, obviously, guy opting out that we thought would opt in, Al Horford's opting out, who's a better center option than Valanciunas. So, Willie Cauley-Stein is wanting to become unrestricted free agent. So, you know, the market for centers was when we started this process a month ago, when Jonas Valanciunas still had that player option. What the market for centers was him and Nikola Vucevic, and that was a whole lot. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, really good options. And obviously, Nikola was the number one, but now it's become a very, very different market. I don't think those two brands have things that are super in common as far as re-signing Jonas, because, you know, you still need veterans on a team. They're still going to have to sign an additional center. So I think can Jackson Jr. play with Jonas, or Brandon Clarke have different options and different looks. And that's obviously not uncommon for the NBA. I do think it makes it a little easier, just like it, you know, having John Morant makes it a little easier for my cut to go away or to try to call him. It makes it a little easier from the Grizzly perspective. The number is just too high for Jonas. You can just swallow it, which they should do. Anything above 10, 11 million for Jonas Valanciunas, they should just move on. There's nothing that Jonas does that you can't replicate with another NBA player.
It definitely does give them more leverage in that situation, those negotiations with Valanciunas. But let's talk a little bit now about Ja Morant. Mike Conley's gone. Morant is going to be given the keys to run this offense basically from the word go, I would imagine, unless there's something that I'm not aware of there. But Morant's a guy that, you know, has some issues in terms of defensive focus, some shooting stuff, but this is the guy that the Grizzlies are going to be looking to build this franchise around, along with Jaren Jackson Jr. How do you think that he is going to fit with new coach Taylor Jenkins? And you know, is he the sort of player that you have the faith that can lead this team into their next iteration of being a playoff challenger?
I love John Morant. I have thought that should have been the pick, and I think it was far away better than anybody else in the draft besides Zion Williamson. I think that he is a player that has a lot of things about his game that is really hard to teach about the NBA. The same thing, you know, he actually shot pretty decent. I think it was like 36%, and then and in big games in the tournament, he showed up and knocked down shots whenever he was unable to get to the rim. So that ability is there. It has to become on a more consistent basis. For point guards in this league and the NBA, you have to be able to shoot the three ball. So that does have to develop, but it is something you can develop. As far as a passing ability, his vision, the things that he can do in that arena, that stuff's very, very hard to teach. The things you can, how you see the court and able to see everything going on at once, that's really hard to teach. You know, the defensive stuff, I think it was a lot of just really not paying attention. I think, you know, he can bulk up, put a little more size on him. I think those will probably, those cons outweigh don't outweigh the pros of all things he's going for. So, as far as Chad Jenkins is concerned, obviously he's just Milwaukee. So there's not a whole lot that we can look to and say, hey, this is what his style is going to be. Just from talking to him, you know, he obviously wants to push the ball, wants to move fast. So someone like Ja Morant, you know, we were asked about him, who he might pick with the number two pick. This was obviously before the draft, who he might pick with the number two pick, and the person he described was Ja Morant. So someone that was athletic and can get up the floor. So all these players that they have, Jaren, Brandon Clark, Ja Morant, those all fit the mold of what Taylor Jenkins has he wants to do. So in theory, on paper, it looks great. It looks like a match made in heaven. And again, Ja Morant, I think, is far and away the best player besides Zion Williamson in the draft. So I think they hit a home run. And obviously, that goes with getting lucky. They got really lucky and were able to get someone like Ja Morant.
The Grizzlies have the potential now, Mark, to be one of the league pass darlings, coming up with exciting players like Jackson, like Clark, and of course, Ja Morant. We're going to be excited to see these guys over the coming season. You're going to have all of this covered, including what Memphis does in free agency, over on Locked On Grizzlies. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Yeah, man, anytime.
And there you have it, another episode of Locked On NBA in the books. Make sure you are following me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and the network on Twitter and on Instagram at @LockedOnNBAnet on both of those social platforms. You subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, on the Himalaya Podcast app, Google Podcasts, and on Spotify as well. And if you could give us a 5-star rating and review, that would be most excellent. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.